Okay. So, so I'm going to talk about black. Black hole and topological strings. This is a work with a number of colleagues and so on. I'm not going to give any references. You can ask me later. I will be glad to supply some of them. So, what is the basic idea? The basic idea is very simple. More precisely, the connection is between black hole entropy. And topological string. One thing I don't have much to say, but I think it'll be interesting to ask, is there are there any further things on the left-hand side that could be having a further thing on the right-hand side, which are in the topological in nature? So right now we just have a simple statement about just the entropy and the relation of topological string. It's a rather limited statement, but still, it's an interesting statement. And you could imagine that extremal black hole scatterings and so on, something near extremality or at the extremality might be related still to topological string, and it might be interesting to develop. So that's a question I raised instead of at the end at the beginning. But let me then go on to the things that we do know about the connection between the black hole and topological string. I don't know if you guys can see it from there. Can you? Probably, maybe you can move this a bit further back, huh? That's okay, that's okay. No, my hands are just only my arms, my head is... That's why I just use it, yes. So, okay, so what is a black hole entropy? Well, this counts, well, more precisely BPS, which preserves some supersymmetry, counting extremal black holes. And here, topological string, typically we talk about topological string as some Calabi-Yau threefold. So clearly this relation should involve Calabi-Yau threefold on this side too, and there are two possibilities. You either take M theory on Calabi-Yau, or you can take type 2 strings on Calabi-Yau. Now you might think that topological string, this word string, must necessarily relate to this latter here, but it turns out it actually connects to both M theory and the type 2 strings. So here, in the case of M theory and Calabi-Yau threefold, we'll be talking about 5D black holes. And in the case of Calabi-Yau threefold, we'll be talking about, with the type 2 on Calabi-Yau threefold, we'll be talking about 4D black holes.
People don't hear much?
Oh. Oh, I come, maybe I could come in the front and then go back. It's a quite a production.
Because there's no walls.
I see. So, people in the back, please let me know if you hear me. And if you don't hear me, please let me know. You can hear?
Very clear.
Very clear. You have good hearing. So what is a black hole in the first case? Well, the black hole in the first case are M2 brains wrapping around two cycles of a Calabi-Yau. So let me call this case 1, case 2. So case 1, M2 brain on a two cycle inside a Calabi-Yau. That's case 1. Case 2, let's do type 2A to be specific. We talk about D0, D2, D4, and D6 brains inside the Calabi-Yau bound together, wrapping around some cycles inside the Calabi-Yau. If the M2 brain wraps holomorphic cycles in the Calabi-Yau, this is supersymmetric, so it's a BPS extremal black hole. In other words, it's the minimal size given in the same class as choosing. In other words, the class of the second homology determines the charge of the black hole, and if you make it minimal area in that charge, that one way of doing it, the most efficient way of doing it, is take a holomorphic curve in that class, then by definition, it minimizes the Keter form on it, which is the area. It minimizes the area, sorry, which is the same as the Keter form on it. So M2 brings on a C2 cycle, on a holomorphic C2, on a holomorphic representative of the cycle, is an example of BPS black hole in 5D. And in the 4D, again, you can think about the bound states of the 0D, 2D, 4D, 6 brain, which wrap holomorphic cycles, namely 0 cycle, 2 cycle, 4 cycle, and 6 cycles bound together in some way. And they form charged black holes in 4 dimensions. The 0 and D2 brain can be taken to be labeling electric charge states, and D4 and D6 to be magnetic charge states. M5 brain is, as you just said, you do have M5 brain Euclidean instantons, that's correct. And that will affect, for example, the universal hypermultiply as an instanton correction. But as an object, you don't have it.
I suppose if you take, compactify the M theory on a circle, then you have M5 wrapping 4 cycles. Are they set to 4?
No.
But I mean, if you don't take the limit, the string theory limit, if you compactify but don't make it too small.
But as an object, anyhow, it's either D4 brain or this. So this is type 2A version of it. So there's a type 2B version of it as well. If instead of type 2A, you have type 2B. Instead of these even cycle D brains, you have odd D brains. And in that case, D3 brain wrapped around special Lagrangian 3 cycles inside the Calabi-Yau threefold plays the same role, mirror, to these D brains wrapped around holomorphic cycles. And they are BPS. So we would be interested in counting these or these. Yes?
Could you record a little
file?
I'm afraid.
Okay.
We'll post this in the web.
No. Okay, so the first case, so now we talk about topological strings. The topological A model, as was nicely reviewed by Sergey, relates to what's called Gromov-Witten invariance, which is basically counting holomorphic curves inside the Calabi-Yau threefold, appropriate notion of counting. So a souped-up version of what that counting is can be done. And so, indeed, you would think, therefore, that the first question, namely the 5D version, M-theory on Calabi-Yau threefold, counting M2 brain, which is wrapped around holomorphic cycles, is more or less, almost tautologically, the same as topological A model. You're just counting them, so appropriate index counting is what a topological A model is. And so there are some things you have to be careful about, the distinction between Gromov-Witten invariance and what the BPS numbers are, but we know how to do that. And so essentially you can read off from the data of the Gromov-Witten invariance what these numbers are, how many bound states there are. And so this is not that surprising. At least right now it's no more surprising, and we understand that pretty well. So that's not going to be what I'm going to talk about too much. The 5D case is almost obviously related to topological strings just by construction, almost. So let me not talk about this too much.
You are using some notion of topological strings in topological M theory here?
No. So that's a surprise. The topological string, ordinary A model on a Calabi-Yau, counts holomorphic curves. Now, to be more precise, it counts holomorphic curves, but there's a genus expansion. So for every given class, you have the Gromov-Witten invariance, which is a genus dependence. And it turns out that if you try to count them, they will be related in type 2 string to bound states of D2 brain and D0 brains, which you can relate by thinking on an extra circle compactification of M theory as M2 brains. So therefore, from the data of topological strings, you can read off what's the bound state of M2 brain, and that's what I mean. The topological has the data to count the D2 brains, which is effectively the M2 brain. So that's the link. So therefore, from the topological string on a 5D times a circle, you can read off the 5D black hole data. Is that clear?
Yeah.
So this is something we studied with Rajesh Kopakumar a while back, and it's already like 8-9 years ago, whatever, some number of years ago, so it's not what I'm going to talk about right now. It's relatively simple story, relative to what I'm going to talk about. It's a relatively simple and well understood story. What is not so simple and not well understood yet, but I would say very exciting, is the latter one. Yes.
So there is some BPS, non-renormalization theorem.
Yes.
Degeneracies of these states don't change as you go from weak up to strong.
Yes, there is. So, so more precisely, I'm counting the indexed black hole. So let me be a bit more precise. So in five dimension, the rotation group is SO4. And SO4 is SU2 times SU2. So it turns out that if you have a BPS object, any object, you can decompose it in terms of the SU2 left and SU2 right. And you can ask, you can consider the combination of minus 1 to the F right, or J3 right, summed over all the right degrees of SU2 right degrees of freedom, and fix the J3 left part. Roughly speaking, you can weight the J3 left piece by something like this, by some extra parameter, lambda times J3 left. So there's a function of lambda. And you can also fix a charge, or you can put a plus Q dot some class of the Calabi-Yau. Well, if you think of Q, some parameters, alpha. So you can measure it in terms of alpha and lambda, and this turns out to be related to the Kähler class of topological string and the string coupling constant of topological string. And moreover, this sum here guarantees that this is an invariance, that if there are changes of mass, they pair up to cancel. So when you go to this longer monitor, so this is an index.
So this is like elliptic genus?
This is exactly like elliptic genus, but instead of U1 times U1, which is what would be in 1 plus 1 dimension, it is SU2 times SU2. And so it's exactly the 5D analog of the elliptic genus for this number of supersymmetry. Exactly. So a topological string can be viewed as computing the elliptic genus of the target space theory with n equal to 2 with 8 supercharges. That's exactly the way to look at it. It's a nice story, but anyhow, it's relatively well understood, I would say. Well, even though there are still mathematical aspects of it being developed, I think the physics part of it is essentially clear. This is unlike this latter thing that I'm going to tell you about, which is the physics part of it even is not completely developed or understood. So, and it's in fact much deeper than this statement, I would say. So let me move on to that.
From a gravity point of view, for instance, the entropy for five-dimensional black holes, that has not been worked out as far as I know.
I somewhat doubt that there would be. I mean, I'm not an expert. There are other experts here we could ask. But my feeling, well, or you perhaps. Well, okay, so you guys among yourselves debate this out. But my gut feeling is that this stuff doesn't exist in 5D. The corrections are only essential to 4D. The vector model correction we talk about. That's my feeling based on this relation between 5D black hole and the 4D BPS count. I mean, 4D topological string count. Let me give you an example. So if you compute the prepotential in the 5D theory, it's just a classical intersection of geometry. There is no further correction to it. It's non-renormalized. Unlike the 4D where you have these instanton corrections, worksheet corrections and all that. So that's the beginning of a correction in the 4D case, which persists to higher genus. The classical triple intersection doesn't get corrected. I doubt there will be analogs on higher genus as well. So roughly speaking, it's as if it's G go to zero limit. I mean, lambda goes to zero. And you're picking out a particular alpha prime and lambda goes to zero limit of it. But, okay, anyhow, it would be interesting to prove it one way or the other. If there are any interesting ones, I would love to know about it. Now,
has the wall construction been done above 4D?
I don't know.
But the wall.
Well, there's an analog of the wall. There's a paper by Ashok Sen,
yeah,
who talks about arbitrary corrections, higher derivative corrections to arbitrary dimension black holes. So in some sense, he has studied it. I don't know how extensively it has been studied. He wrote a paper on it a few months ago, and he tried to study the effect of higher derivative terms on the black hole entropy in any dimension.
Mm-hmm.
you don't know the answer.
For the the answer to your question, I think people studied it in that sense. But
what Ashok found?
Oh no, he studied it and he wrote a general formula of how you actually compute in terms of these higher derivative terms and applied it specifically to the case I'm talking about to get the answer we also have. So there was a check for his general formalism, but. Okay, so the thing I want to talk about is more the connection with 4D black holes. And the 4D black hole, as I said, so let me remind you, we are talking about bound states of D0, D2, D4, and D6 brain. Now, what does this have to do with topological string? This looks very bizarre, because topological string at this counts holomorphic curves wrapped around two cycles. How could it know about four cycles or six cycles? It's bizarre. So nobody in his or her right mind would have claimed any connection between the black hole entropy and topological string. I would certainly not have done it if there were no further evidence. Just from the structure of it, it sounds mathematically wrong. Okay, it's that kind of thing that a mathematician would not have come up with anything like this, because it just sounds wrong. But physics reasoning, and in particular some computation that DeWitt et al. Did, suggested that there indeed is a deep connection between topological strings and the black hole entropy, including all these charges. And we developed it further last year, and I will just tell you what the upshot of those statements are. The upshot is that, if I call these charges abstractly Q, and these charges abstractly P, electric and magnetic charges, and if I want to compute the entropy, let me denote the degeneracies as a function of the electric and magnetic charges as omega of Q and P. The natural thing to do, it turns out, is to consider a mixed grand canonical ensemble where you sum over all the electric charge with some chemical potential. Where phi is some chemical potential. Now, doing this mixed ensemble is not so strange in half integral. For example, if you have a gauge theory, you fix a magnetic monopole charge and you sum over all the electric degrees of freedom. That's what we usually do in half integral anyhow. You have sector by sector in a magnetic charge. And this is kind of like that. You're fixing the magnetic charge and you're summing over all the electric degrees of freedom, which are lighter. You can think of it as fundamental degrees of freedom. This makes much more sense when the radius is large, where D4 and D6 brains are very massive. I'm blocking your view. Where D4 and D6 brains are very massive, and so therefore it's natural to sum over the light states, and this is not such an unnatural ensemble to look at. So the statement is that if you did this, this is equal to the topological string partition function or wave function. The wave function nature of it was emphasized in Sergei's talk, so let me use the terminology of a wave function. So it's a wave function as a function of P plus I phi, the absolute value squared. Now, first of all, what do I mean psi as a function of these? Because the number of variables should match, or the number of variables right. Well, the topological string is a function of Kähler moduli, which is the number of D2 brains, and the string coupling constant. So that's the same number of variables as D4 and D6 dual to it, which is P. So the argument, the number of arguments is correct. And you can actually identify the string coupling constant with the overall rescaling of the charge. So the string coupling constant goes like the inverse of the overall charge. So there's an overall rescaling going on. So you can identify that with string coupling constant. Overall rescaling of the total charge, Q and P, gets related to the inverse of the string coupling constant. So this is a conjecture, that this equals this. That counting the black hole entropy is the same as counting topological strings squared. So the fact that you have doubled the degrees of freedom compared to the M2 brain story for M theory is somehow reflected here by squaring this. The fact you have doubled degrees of freedom is the fact that you have holomorphic and anti-holomorphic parts of topological string mixed up, but in a very simple, boring way, effectively. Note that I can combine P and phi in this way because phi is dual to q because it's dot to that, and p and q are dual to each other because they dot together, they're dual space. So phi lives in the same space as p. Sorry to use the mathematical jargon, it's simpler, save some notation. But p and phi can be added in a natural way, and they do get added up. So the electrochemical potential lives in the same space as the magnetic charge. Any questions? So this is the conjecture. Note this conjecture. Yes.
Use the to be language.
Yes.
Can this be related? How does S-duality play a role?
S-duality does not play a role, as far as I know. But
I mean, since it relates Q and P.
Well, electric and mag. Oh, I see. The S-duality of four dimension. You mean? Well, in any of the two supersymmetric gauge theories, there is no S-duality per se. There's a symplectic transformation you can do on the charges, and that's true here too, but there's no symmetry really. So, yeah, there's nothing about the symmetries. There's no symmetry. But what is important about what you just mentioned about electric magnetic transformation is how it acts on the wave function. And indeed changing, you could ask me, what if I mixed up what I meant by electric by some symplectic transformation, defined P to be my electric charges and Q to be my magnetic? What happens to this relation? Or some mixed ensemble, some mixture of them in terms of some symplectic transformation. And indeed this formula changes a little bit. And in fact, if I had done the P version, this would have gone to Fourier transform of topological string, which is exactly that wave function nature of topological string partition function that Sergei was talking about. That was well known. So in other words, this only refers to a particular basis of writing the topological string answer, and indeed different orientation here exactly matches the different wave functions you're going to get. So if you choose a different ensemble, you'll have to do a different answer here. Any questions? Okay, so this is a conjecture. Now before I go to whether or not this is a correct conjecture, I want to draw your attention to one fact. If you look at black holes with tiny charges, this corresponds to very, very big topological string coupling constant. Topological string theory, like any string theory, is an asymptotic expansion. So it doesn't make sense as an exact answer anymore. So you couldn't believe this statement because at best this is an asymptotic expansion. So the most you can hope this to be true is an asymptotic expansion valid when the corresponding charges are large. So this can at most be an asymptotic expansion, and you should not expect that to be an exact identity just because topological string is not even well defined as a sum. If you try to actually sum up the series, it's going to be an asymptotic series. It doesn't exist as an exact answer. So this statement is only an asymptotic expansion valid for large charges.
It's a radius of convergence?
No, it's asymptotic series. So it's
for any value of a lambda.
Yes. I don't believe this has been proven, but I the examples I know are of that type.
I mean, in some cases you can find the exact topological string wave function. But you say those particular but not compact problems don't apply to.
Well, you could try to give a compact. You can try to give a compact answer in some cases, like the non-compact ones you mentioned. But there are other non-compact examples where you can more clearly see there's an asymptotic expansion it doesn't have. And I will mention those examples, which ones. So typically, you should view this only as an asymptotic expansion.
But there are cases where you have an exact answer.
You could propose an exact answer.
Trend-Simon.
Right. You could propose.
You know them better than I do.
Well, you could propose an exact answer. Whether or not it's an exact answer for the question I'm asking is under question. And the example that I know suggests that maybe there is no general exact answer because it's an asymptotic series. Generically, it is. Some cases there may be. Cases that you can evade that, but generically it seems like it is.
And from the supergravity side, the sum is also an asymptotic sum, or is it true series?
Well, if you try to see from supergravity side, which suggested this relation, these are corrections to gravity-photon powers of gravity-photon potential. So, in other words, basically you have some term like f to the power of 2g minus 2 times r squared, where f is the gravity-photon. And genus G correction computes these kind of things, and in the context of black hole, F has a VIF. So it gets contribution to this. But, you know, there could have been a term like exponential 1 over F, if you give a VIF to F. So you cannot trust the supergravity is only an asymptotic expansion in the sense that you're just computing polynomial correction to an effective term. So you cannot process any more than that either. So, okay. So all I'm trying to point out is that you couldn't hope that this be an exact statement, and examples that I will mention show that it's not an exact statement. It's only an asymptotic expansion. Namely, if you try to compute QMP for QP large, then you can use this to get a large QMP dependence. So in fact, let me explain that a bit more. Yeah, this is an index. So when I say the number of states, BPS states come in a supersymmetric multiplet. So you can look at any supersymmetric multiplet and look at the lowest state on that supersymmetric multiplet. It's a massive state with some spin. So count it as plus one if it's a boson, and count it as a minus one if it's a fermion, and add it up. That's what I mean by this. So it's an index entropy. Thanks for pointing that out. Okay. So let me invert the map. So I wrote down the mixed canonical ensemble. You might be interested in microcanonical ensemble. So you might be interested in omega of p and q, in which case the formula becomes like this. You can write it as integral of psi of p plus I phi times squared times e to the minus e to the q phi. And integrate over phi. So if you integrate over phi, you have a function of p and q, and I'm just inverting that Legendre transform, or Fourier transform if you wish. This should be viewed only as a formal statement. That is, what I mean by this is that if you're interested in the large QMP dependence, then you can just do an asymptotic expansion here and read off the large PQ and dependence of omega and p and q.
Since you don't really know how to decide a small p and q.
No, this side we do know at small p and q in some cases. So this is a very interesting possible check that in what the regime is valid and what it's not when we know an example. And I'm going to talk about those examples. Okay, so this is the statement. But actually, let me draw your attention to the following fact. This is what's called the Wigner function for a wave function. So if you view psi as a wave function, then this omega is what we usually call the Wigner function on the phase space. So this is unfortunate that this is not taught typically as an undergraduate introduction to quantum mechanics. I think it really should be. Maybe some people have learned it in an undergraduate course. I didn't learn it. But let me actually review it in case you haven't seen it. So the idea is very simple. Just take a wave function of a particle in one dimension, the usual good of quantum mechanics, starting of quantum mechanics, psi of x. Well, what Wigner was interested was to say if there is an analogous object in phase space, which is like a density of fluid. So quantum mechanics sounded like a probabilistic statement of some kind. Could you promote it to a fluid on the phase space with some probabilities? Now, I mean, usually we say that's a bad question, x and p don't commute, that's not the way to phrase it. But nevertheless, Wigner came up with a natural notion of a density on the phase space. Namely, he defined omega of x and p to be psi star of x plus a, psi of x minus a, let me see, a over 2, e to the I a dot p dA. So he defined this integral, basically pushing the wave function back and forth by displacement A and weighing it with the momentum that could fit there roughly. And integrating over all possible shifting of the psi and psi star in this way, you get a function of x and p. This is a definition he gave. You can check that it's a real object. Okay, what property does it have? Well, if you integrate omega of x and p, if you don't care about what the p-value is, this turns out to be exactly psi of x squared. You can check this. So it's like you would think in the fluid. Namely, if you don't care about what the momentum value is, you get psi of x squared. What's nicer than that? If you integrate over x, you get the Fourier transform wave function of p squared. So it works exactly the way it should have worked for a wave function. So you see, this object is nicer than these objects because it doesn't refer to a choice of x or p. It knows about both, but it doesn't pick out. So it's like what we usually teach, you don't want to choose coordinates. Once you choose x and p, you have already chosen a coordinate. Here, you're not choosing a coordinate. It's a function on the phase space. Yes?
Can you extract phase information?
Absolutely. I'm giving you psi of x and phi of p. So from that, you can get everything you want. This is indeed equivalent to knowing psi. Not every omega gives you a psi, but once you know an omega which has come from a psi, you can reconstruct psi. Now, there's something funny here, though. You see, people didn't take it too seriously, this thing. Well, you can use it still to answer certain questions, and this ended up mathematically getting studied, and non-commutative theories, non-commutative space, and deformation quantization, all that go back to this original work of Wigner. And people have studied it further, so you can try to reformulate quantum mechanics completely in this language. And people have done it, but this is a more conventional viewpoint. One thing about this which is bizarre is that you really cannot think about this as a probability density because it's not positive definite. Omega of x and p is a real quantity you can check, but it's not positive definite. It could be negative. What's the meaning of a negative probability? Okay, now let's go back to the context we were talking about. You see, it's exactly like this where we have a wave function. Here I've written in terms of imaginary ones, but remember this is just a formal expression when you're writing as an integral. It's just an asymptotic series, so it doesn't matter whether I put an either or a counter-rotate. So counter-rotation of this is exactly like this formula, p plus phi and p minus phi with e to the I q phi, which is exactly the analog of this statement. And therefore, the black hole entropy is playing the role of the Wigner function on the phase space. Amazing. But better yet, the negative values of the Wigner function make perfect sense, because it's not the entropy of a black hole, it's the index entropy of the black hole, which is plus or minus fermion number in it. So that's why the probability is not positive definite in our context. It's allowed. You're just counting the number of states with whether or not it's boson or fermion. So a minus answer is acceptable in this context. So it sounds amazing structure that somehow the quantum mechanical aspects of topological string is beautifully coming out in terms of some nice object, some natural construction, which gives you this black hole entropy, index black hole entropy. Okay, so that's the statement here. But again, you should view this as an asymptotic expansion. So if you're trying to do this integral, if you write this as some kind of an expansion, phi squared, phi cubed, etc., you think about the usual way like you do Feynman diagrams. You can take asymptotic expansion by doing this integral, but you don't trust this non-perturbatively. It doesn't make sense, really. So it's only an asymptotic expansion valid for large Q and P. So you extract from this the answers for Q and P much, much bigger than 1. Let me rewrite this in a slightly different form. I could rewrite this as defining a wave function psi P and Q as a function of phi to be, let me just define it here, it is psi at p plus I phi times e to the q phi over 2. So this is my psi of p and q. So notice that another way of writing this is just to write this as a square. So I could write omega of p and q as the integral of psi of p and q squared d phi. So it's like a norm of a state, in an indefinite sense, because I'm doing something funny here. So it's a norm of a psi pq state. Sorry?
The minus sign which you could have, because where is that now in the second way of writing? Yeah.
Yeah, all I'm just saying is that psi squared, so I'm just rewriting, I'm not doing anything fancy, I'm just rewriting the statement in this language. It's just the terminology. You see, this is p plus I phi, p minus.
Peter was asking, can we see in this language when
we write
square, why can we make it?
Yeah, in the last way, I understand
Well, this is only analytic continuation does funny things to positivities. That's the same issue here. Namely, I could have said the same thing about here. If I had done analytic continuation on A, I would have written exactly this expression as an absolute value squared, and it would have been real, which is the incorrect statement. A positive, and it's not correct. That's the analytic continuation fails.
What's the issue of analytic continuation?
As an exact statement, it fails. That's exactly what's wrong. But asymptotically, I'm dealing with this, so I'm not worried about... This is not going to end up being the exact statement for us, so I'm not going to pay too much attention to whether it's positive or negative or whatnot, because ultimately, this is only an asymptotic formula.
So, could the correct formula be the analytic
continuation? No, I'm coming to that. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so is it true? Well, we don't know. We don't know, but we have some examples where we have checked it. And in those examples that we can check it, it seems to be asymptotically true. So let me tell you the examples that we do know it's asymptotically true. And the examples are very simple. It's of the kind as of the following kind. Suppose you have some Riemann surface inside the Calabi-Yau. So there would be two more non-compact directions on top of the Riemann surface to make it a threefold. So we have three complex dimensions, so there are two complex dimensions on top of it. And it turns out that, well, to be more precise, you have to talk about compact version of the theory if you want to talk about black holes in four dimension. Otherwise, the Newton constant would not be finite. Therefore, we want to actually do the compact case. However, you can think about this as a limit of the compact case, so you can actually relate this to the black hole computation that I was telling you about, so it's a good starting point. But the nice thing about these examples is twofolds. One, topological strings are computable for this. Topological string partition function are known. That's fact number one. Fact number two is you can count the degeneracy of the black hole for specific types of black holes. What kinds of black holes I have in mind? It turns out the black holes you can count are zero brains bound to the two brain, some number of two brains wrapped around the Riemann surface, bound to a D4 brain wrapped around one of these non-compact directions and wrapping the Riemann surface at the same time. So there's a D4 brain wrapped around the fiber and the Riemann surface. There are D2 brains which just wrap the Riemann surface, and there are D0 brains which are points on the Riemann surface. You can talk about bound states of D0, D2, and D4 brains of this Calabi-Yau and count the corresponding black hole entropy. So you can actually do it. It turns out to be related to n=4 Yang-Mills theory on the four dimensions, which is the total space of a line bundle, this other direction of Calabi-Yau, on the Riemann surface. So n=4 Yang-Mills on a four manifold. And counting the black hole entropy turns out to be computation of n=4 topological Yang-Mills. So then you can use some techniques of topological Yang-Mills, localization and all that, and symmetries of rotation of the fiber to localize onto the zero set of the rotation, which is the Riemann surface. So you can reduce the problem to a computation on the Riemann surface. And so let me tell you what it happens. So let's say you want to consider the case where you have n D4 brains, and you put chemical potential theta over G string and 1 over G string for D0 brains. So in other words, these two are electric and this one is magnetic. So we fix the magnetic charge and we sum over the electric charge as we usually are instructed. So if you do this, you find that this problem gets mapped to two-dimensional Yang-Mills for the gauge group UN, where this N is the same as this N, on a Riemann surface of that genus of, let's say, area 1, where Yang-Mills squared coupling constant is the same as G-string, and theta is the theta angle for the U1 of that UN. So in other words, the parameters the partition function of the Yang-Mills theory on a Riemann surface, with identification of the Yang-Mills squared coupling constant being related to string coupling constant, and the theta angle of the U1 part of the UM being related to the chemical potential for the D2 brain, is counting the black hole entropy with this mixed ensemble of the electric charges. And lucky us, we know how to compute the 2D Yang-Mills partition function. To be more precise, it's a Q-deformed version of 2D Yang-Mills. But that's also computable, so it's not a big deal. And in the case of the Riemann surface being the 2 torus, it turns out to be the same as the ordinary 2D Yang-Mills on a 2 torus. So let me talk about that particular case.
So you have chemical potential to the other angles.
Sorry?
You are identifying theta.
Yes.
With the chemical potential. Now theta angles are periodic.
So is this, in the imaginary direction, right? In other words, remember the chemical potential, so there's a sense of I that you have to be careful, but you have this formula. So phi is periodic in the shifting by 2 pi I, because Q is integer. There are some subtleties there, but that works out. Okay, so the natural case to study would be one of these examples, namely T2. Let's just take a T2 inside the Calabi-Yau. So this is inside the Calabi-Yau. And we want to compute the partition function. So we want to talk about ND4 brains with chemical potentials related to theta and the string coupling constant. I just changed notation. I used to call this G string. Let me call it lambda. Then, this is related to UN on T2 with G Yang-Mills squared is lambda, and the theta parameter is theta parameter of the Yang-Mills. Namely, you're computing now omega of N, D2 brains, and D0 brains, weighed with e to the minus theta over lambda, the number of D2 brains, minus 1 over lambda, the number of 0 brains. So the statement is that if you did this sum over Q2 and Q0, this is the same as the 2D Yang-Mills partition function for the gauge group UN, as a function of the chemical potential theta and the Yang-Mills coupling constant being identified to lambda. It's a very simple statement. And it's computable, and I'll write down for you the answer in a second. And then the question is this the square of the topological string partition function with the right change of variables? That sounds strange. The partition function of Yang-Mills is not a square of anything, it's just the Yang-Mills partition function. How could it end up being a square? It's a bizarre statement. From the outset, you would think this is not going to be true. And it's not true. It is not true that this is a square of anything. You wouldn't expect it. But it is true asymptotically. It turns out, as I will now explain, the 2D Yang-Mills for large n is a square of a function, exactly as predicted by this black hole link. So if you did not know the black hole, you could have predicted the existence of a square structure of the 2D Yang-Mills partition function. I wish that was the way it was discovered. The discovery was the reverse way. Namely, Gross and Taylor had studied already 2D Yang-Mills at large n, and they had found, perhaps to their surprise, that at large n it factorizes to a square of an object. For them it was a bizarre fact. Why did it square? So here we have an explanation of that fact based on four-dimensional black holes and topological string. So we could have anticipated that. Well, to be honest, we knew about this Gross and Taylor answer, which motivated us to think about Calabi-Yaus which have a torus. So, okay, so there was some feedback into the knowledge here. Now, okay, so what is this 2D Yang-Mills? So I want to tell you, so let me set up what I want to get at. The thing I'm trying to get at is, why is this formula not exact? We now know an example where it's not exact, because the 2D Yang-Mills is computable, it's the black hole entropy, and it's not square of anything except the large n. So the fact that it's only an approximate statement that it's a square thing, it will tell us what are the corrections to that square structure. So by learning what that mistake is, we could try to go back and to rethink our physics. What are we missing? So I have to tell you a little bit more about 2D Yang-Mills. 2D Yang-Mills, UN, on T2. It is a very easy object. It is just, I'll give you the answer. It's that simple. So you write Q is e to the minus lambda, where lambda is g angle squared. The partition function turns out to be Q to the power of ni summed over I squared. And you're summing over all possible ni's, where I goes from 1 to n. With one caveat, it's this simple. The caveat being that none of the n's are equal. Ni's are distinct. So all the ni's are different. Ni not equal to nj for any I or j. For I not equal to j. So distinct n's. That's the partition function. In fact, you can put the theta angle if you wish, and it looks like something like this. So that's also easy to put in. So this is the partition function of Yang-Mills as a function of the coupling constant, and theta as a function of n. It's that. That's it. That's the answer. It's not a square of anything, as you can immediately see. This is the answer. But now I will explain to you why this has a nice square structure for large n. And the key fact has to do with the fact that these are distinct. So you may not immediately spot this, but this partition function is the same as the partition function of ideal gas in one dimension, where the gas is made of fermion, ideal non-relativistic gas of free fermions on a circle. This is the partition function of it. Why is that? Well, let me write it in a way which is a bit more illuminating. Suppose I call e to the minus beta times the Hamiltonian. So take Hamiltonian to be summation of p squared, the momenta, the usual momenta, where you have n particles. Well, if you are in a circle, the p is quantized, just like these n's are quantized. And there are n of these particles, just like these. And e to the minus beta h is like q to the sum of ni squared. And if these are fermion, you cannot choose the same p more than once, which means these ni's are distinct. So this is just the trace of e to the minus beta h for an ideal gas of non-relativistic fermions in one dimension. So, but this is the nice thing about this picture is that it gives us intuition. So let's think about it like that. So this is equivalent to thinking about just the one-dimensional circle with free fermions, and we are just doing the partition function of it. Okay, so how do we do it? Well, easy. We just look at, let me just draw all the possible momenta. So the momenta are quantized. P is our integer. So it could be positive or negative. And the Hamiltonian is P squared. So you have n fermions. What is the lowest energy state? If you're trying to compute trace of e to the minus beta h, the first thing you do is to first look at the ground state. And the ground state is easy. You just take n over 2... Let's take n even, for example. N over 2 states up here and n over 2 states down here. And you fill them up. And that's the minimal energy because the energy goes like p squared. But then there are excitations. What are the excitations? Well, the excitations could be that one of these levels gets excited on top of this Fermi C. Or equivalently, some of the excitations get excited below this other Fermi C. There are two Fermi C's here. Is that clear? At large n, this gets farther and farther apart, these two Fermi surfaces. So the problem at large n looks like one Fermi surface with many states going down all the way to infinity, essentially, as the ground state, and another Fermi surface, which is down here, and states which go all the way up to infinity, effectively not seeing the other Fermi surface. Because n goes to infinity, it just doesn't see it. So you write the excitations of this one, you get some partition function of the excitations of the Fermi surface here, and it turns out to be exactly what we call the psi topological. And this other guy is complex conjugated, of course, because of the symmetries of the theory, it gets complex conjugated, and this is psi star. So it's not a surprise that for large n, this is a square of something. Great, so we have now accomplished our first task, namely, at large n, we can compute this, and it agrees with the topological string partition function square exactly as anticipated. But now we also see this is not correct because of the entanglement of the two Fermi surfaces for finite n. this statement cannot be true as an exact statement, because some of the eigenvalues may have come from here or below here, where we thought this belongs to the other guy. So we are mixing up fermions, the identity crisis of fermions, of which one is above p equal to 0 and which one is below p equal to 0, is messing up this picture, and we have to correct this formula. Is that clear? So how do we organize? So the question is to try to start with this as a starting expansion and correct the fact that the Fermi surfaces are finite distance apart and they can get mixed up. This fact, surprisingly, as far as I know, has not been studied in condensed matter physics. Perhaps for good reason. N is usually infinite in some sense. 10 to the 23 or whatever is big enough. But if you do n equals to 10 or 20 and so on, then you have to be more careful, and we are interested precisely in finite end corrections. Well, okay, so what turns out to be the answer? Well, I'll tell you the answer in a... just explain what the mistake is and how to correct it, just in pictures, basically. So we said that eigenvalues which are excited above this level are okay, above zero. They're counted correctly up here. But there will be some eigenvalues which are excited from down here, which we want to subtract off. So any number of, if there are a certain number of eigenvalues which are coming from below zero and going up here as excitations, we want to subtract out, because that's already part of the data we already had. And vice versa, if there are some number of eigenvalues coming from this other one going up to here, we want to also subtract it out. Put together, this becomes the eigenvalues of three fermions in the middle of a gap you have to subtract out. So in other words, you can take N1 eigenvalues and put it up here. It's a bigger Yang-Mills theory with this mini Yang-Mills theory to be subtracted out. So it's a product of two Yang-Mills theory as a subtraction. So it turns out you can write it, this correction, if you just do the anti-continuation, is Z of Yang-Mills theory with certain number of total eigenvalues. I thought somebody didn't like the talk. So you take Z of N minus N1 Yang-Mills, and it turns out to be multiplicative. So the correction term is something that you subtract off, where N1 plus N2, I'm calling N1 here. So let me call this N over 2 and N over 2 for simplicity, N1 over 2. So it turns out that this correction is a bigger Yang-Mills, or by anti-continuation, a smaller one, multiplied by another Yang-Mills in the middle. So this gap here you have created is a correction, which is like a baby universe. Well, baby Yang-Mills, sorry. So if you want to be more poetic, there are two parents make a baby, and it's a correction to what you would want not to have. But, well, sorry, this is not too poetic, sorry. But you can go generation-wise. It turns out this is over-counting the subtraction, the usual story of BRST and all that. You're over-subtracted. These babies in turn have their own correction error, and they come and they correct, and so on. So you get this branch structure of correction on top of correction, and you get this funny branching structure, which is captured by Catalan numbers, how many ways you can do it. Basically binary trees. The counting of binary trees are how many ways you can do this correction. And so you can try to develop a systematic correction to this formula. So each one of them turn out to be topological string. But now you're getting double topological string, triple topological string, quadruple topological string. It sounds like you're talking about not just one Calabia, but an ensemble of Calabias. Why? Well, because each topological string was a wave function which was coming from quantizing the intersection form on the Calabia. But now you have many of these wave functions. Each one of them is psi squared is multi-state, multi-particle state, which means multi-Calabia geometries, which therefore embedded in string theory must mean disconnected geometries, baby universes. How do we interpret this? Okay, now I want to try to give an interpretation of these corrections in the language more familiar.
Can you get a Van Vleck determinant?
Sorry?
Can you get a Van Vleck determinant?
No. Why Van Vleck?
For multi-particle.
Oh, No. You get Catalan numbers on top of these. Depends on how many splittings and how you do the splittings and so forth. But actually, let me just explain the correction term of order 2. It's already interesting enough. Why were these ignored in the Black Hole story? Well, they are ignored for a very good reason. They are so tiny. They are so tiny you could ignore it. Namely, the black hole entropy typically goes like a square of a charge in four dimension in the BPS black hole. So the number of state goes like exponential of s, which is e to the q squared. Now, there's a natural question is, if you have a black hole of a given charge, is it possible to split it to two black holes? Well, of course it's possible. You can have multi-centered black hole, not a big deal. We usually don't think about it. Why not? Well, the reason we don't think about it that much is because it's so tiny entropy for them. Namely, suppose I split Q to Q plus Q minus, sorry, Q minus 1 and 1. That's the smallest, just take one unit of charge off. How much does it change the entropy? Well, it will give you an entropy, which is the entropy for the Q minus 1 piece and the entropy for 1. Well, this certainly is of order 1, forget about that. For large Q, this goes like Q squared minus 2Q. Therefore, exponentiating this gives you the answer you originally had times a huge correction factor, e to the minus 2Q. So for large Q, these are exponentially suppressed corrections. So for large Q, even one unit of charge coming off is entropically not favored. So if you're interested in counting black hole states, even if there was a chance of them splitting up, it's irrelevant. It's so tiny. It's exponentially suppressed. So people usually don't care about it too much. I mean, semi-classical gravity is doing one thing. Quantum corrections of string on top of it is doing something else. This would be like a non-perturbative string. But now we are there. Now we are there. We're trying to get the exact answer. So it should include all corrections, including these multi-center solutions. They should be suppressed. And indeed, they are. So the interpretation of these multi-contributions of the Yang-Mills is very simple. You're just saying that when you're trying to find the black hole, you put a deep range wrapped around the Calabi-Yau, and you try, therefore, to go to the dual description in terms of gravity. You fix the total charge at an asymptotic infinity to be fixed. That does not require to be spherically symmetric. It doesn't tell you what the charge is inside. So you have to sum over all possible gravitational solutions with that asymptote. This will include not just the single-centered one, but multi-centered one. And you should sum over all of them if you want the correct holographic description, and that's indeed what seems to be the case here. Yes?
Is it clear? I mean, on the one hand, of course, you have this e to the minus 2q, but you also get some sort of configuration.
There will be some p-factors here. Those are p-factors. The leading term is just 6 point. Now, these actually were studied by Brill. These are called the Brill instantons, and he studied these multi-centered situations, and they're splitting structure. So, and indeed, the action was computed, and there was a classical solution was written down, and so they exist, and so forth, and they have been generalized to the supergravity context by Deneff, and so we know these solutions exist as multi-centered black holes. So, let me just tell you one more fact, and then I will just stop, given the... So, this is just one example. Just one example, and we want to know what are the general lessons to learn. Well, the general lessons to learn is that, first of all, holography for black hole involves not just one throat, but multi-throats. And so each wave function here we are getting is near the throat, near the horizon of one of these would-be spherically symmetric black holes. But it also tells you that topological string is becoming third quantized or second quantized in the language. Namely, you have multi-Calabi-Yaus in the story. To try to define it non-perturbatively, you need to talk about all these objects at once. So I will just give you an analogy. And the analogy is with respect to the Hardy-Ramanujan formula. So why am I giving an analogy? You see, I'm trying to search for mathematical structures which are similar to this. You're trying to count an integer, and you get a leading piece, and then you get some sub-leading pieces which are exponentially small. We usually don't care about exponentially small corrections to a leading piece as an additive term. That's something we just draw. But here we have this, and it turns out that this has a precedent in mathematics. In the work of Hardy and Ramanujan, they were trying to count the number of partitions of an integer. So if you just do this and define this, suppose you're interested in doing in counting d of n, how many ways you can partition it as a sum of integers. So this d of n, as we know in string theory, is related to the Hagedorn behavior of string oscillators and so forth. If you try to compute it, it gives you some exponential terms like square root of cn times some constant for large n. So this is the usual Hagedorn behavior for the oscillators. But it turns out that they managed actually not to write just this, but a series of corrections which are suppressed, roughly speaking, of the form e to the alpha root n over L summed over L. Roughly, I'm just being heuristic here. L equals to 1 to infinity with some coefficients, etc. Which had the property that if you go up to some number order n here, the correction is something like order n to the minus 1 quarter. So for sufficiently large n, the correction to this sum is less than an integer. And since you know the actual answer is an integer, you can get an exact answer by just summing a finite number of these terms. So that was their trick, a very, very beautiful mathematical trick in trying to count an integer in terms of some, and it turns out more precisely, Bessel functions here. Very smart trick. But you see, for them it also is, the corrections are very tiny compared to the first one. The first one is e to the root n, but the next term is exponentially suppressed. Because it's e to the root n over 2 down compared to the first one, and n is large. So it's a tiny correction on top of it. But keeping these tiny corrections in sufficient form gives you an exact formula for that count that they were trying to do. This very much reminds me of this baby universe structure, where these are like the baby universe, the suppressed factors. And it'd be interesting to find the precise, more general formulation of the relation between black hole and topological string, which naturally includes it. This should include all possible fractionations of a black hole to multi-centered black holes, and that's an answer which we don't know in general. How can you split the charges? Since the multidimensional space, it actually turns out to be related to the facts about special geometry of the corresponding Calabi. It doesn't have a universal answer. So trying to understand that and the corresponding exact formula is a big challenge, and I think it would be very interesting to develop it. Having in mind the mathematical analogy of Hardy Ramanujan, I think would be interesting. So I think given the structure here, I don't want to take more time, so I will stop here. Yes?
Can you say some words about the relation between these ideas and the counting that are doing Dabolkar and Moore in this last paper?
So they are doing it using the Hedorotic side, and they're counting the Dabolkar-Harvey state. But if you translate that to the variables of topological string, the string coupling constant is bigger than 1. So they are indeed trying to take the naive conjecture of the black hole entropy being square of a wave function and checking if it works for large string coupling constant. And they find some discrepancies. So that shouldn't have worked, and it doesn't work. So it's not a surprise. They're just checking the regime which is not valid, the formula.
Does it give insight in how to correct it?
Well, they have some proposals, but I think that the starting point is flawed. You don't take an asymptotic expansion and plug in some value bigger than 1. So it just doesn't make sense.
Unless you have some hope of going beyond the asymptotic.
Yeah, but they are trying to check the naive formulation of the conjecture. And I would say that there would be a version, which is this multi-center black hole version, which should have beyond asymptotic expansion statement. But precisely developing that is not done. So. Not a single ADS2 times S2 Calabia, because here I'm already saying that D-brains on a Calabia are not dual to one ADS2 times S2, but to multi-centered ADS2 times S2.
But can you then make the connection between the two
theory is more precise?
Well, in this set of examples we did, namely, you fix the charge at infinity and you get these multi-centered black holes which asymptotically become disconnected products of ADS2 times S2 times Calabi-Yau's, these wave universe geometries. So that you can do. So the holography statement is not that puzzling. You put a D-brain and you look at all gravity solution with that asymptote to that. That works. That naive statement works. But restricting to one center ADS2 times S2 is a mistake. That's all.
So this idea should also apply to other holographic settings?
Oh yes, yes. I think for all holographic black hole settings. So there was a puzzle for ADS2 holography, and this is, I think, goes in the direction of resolving some of it. So you shouldn't talk about one ADS2 times, one ADS2 dual to a CFT. It's an ensemble of ADS2s being dual to one CFT. That's what happened. The 2D Yang-Mills was not dual to one ADS2 geometry, but to many of them, this ensemble of these black holes. It's the multi-centered black holes.
Is it possible to extend these ideas to non-extremal black holes?
It could be. It would be interesting. One should have to do something much more fancy than topological strings for that. But I think the general idea should be true. In fact, the order of the correction of the multi-centered black hole is the same order of correction as the loss of information for ordinary black holes. So it suggests that perhaps the multi-centeredness has something to do with the notion of information loss, but that's speculative, so I'm not sure. Okay, I guess that's it then. So we'll have lunch at 1? One? At 1 o'clock? Okay, whenever it's ready.